Good evening and welcome to the October 2nd, 2007 regular meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board met in closed session. We discussed personnel status of negotiations with the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. We also discussed student personnel, review of discipline hearing procedures and outcomes for specific students. Do we have a consensus on the order of business? Okay. Let's move forward then and go to approval of minutes. So do I hear a motion to approve the minutes of the meeting for September 18th?
I'll move approval of the meeting minutes for the 18th.
Second.
It's been moved by Mr. Peter and seconded by Mrs. Roger. Is there any discussion? Mr. Spadafore?
Yeah, thank you. I have to ask that the secretary for the board remove my vote from a portion of the agenda last meeting on September 18th on page 15.2. I didn't realize that my wife, Deborah, was being considered for a contract to provide curriculum for the visual performing arts, or I would have excluded myself at that time. And now that I know that, I'm not disclosing how I would have voted, but I have to withdraw my vote from the approval of that particular item. And with that change, then I have no other comment regarding approval of those minutes.
Okay. Any other comments on the, or any other discussion on the minutes?
Yes, okay. Please.
Mr. Buckman.
I'm wondering if the board would indulge me during the discussion on AB 602, it was expressed at that time that there was some concern that all the details were not finalized yet, and I think the minutes ought to reflect that comment.
Okay. Is that acceptable to the maker of the motion then, the two amendments to it? Okay. Mr. Spadafore, does that work for you? Okay. Any other discussion on the minutes? I'm sorry, Mrs. Holmes?
Since the minutes reflect that Mr. Spadafore actually voted last time, and a correction to the minutes would not be appropriate, but the board might want to re-vote on that item, pull that vote back and take it over so that he can abstain at this time.
Now the question I would have about that is those were for purchase orders.
After the fact, I don't think that would be a big problem.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Regarding the AB 602, I need a specific correction on where that statement's going to go.
Mr. Buckman, would you?
Yes. At the end of the first paragraph, I'll say they're projected and may not be over the program calling services. At the end of the first paragraph, I would recommend that it say the board expressed concern that all details had not been finalized.
Does that come into the first sentence of the third paragraph where it says there was apprehension expressed about making a firm commitment to this prior to ironing out all the details? Because that's what I thought the comment was about.
Can you tell me what paragraph
is? Yeah, it's on page 3 under action discussion, third paragraph, first sentence. It says there was apprehension expressed about making a firm commitment to AB 602 funding prior to ironing out the details. Okay.
Okay. Set. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Carries 7-0. Let's move on then to presentations. And this one doesn't have an item number, but that doesn't mean we're not welcoming someone new to our family. Mr. Miller.
Thank you. And I take great pleasure at this time in introducing to the board the newest member of the Fiscal Services team and who will be now the Director of Fiscal Services. We've been able to acquire Julie Lang from Paso Robles Unified, and she comes to us. And I can't tell you how pleased I am to find somebody of Julie's caliber and demeanor to be able to step in and be part of our team. I'm certain she's going to turn out to be a real success for us.
And on behalf of the board, we want to welcome you, and we look forward to hearing from you at the meetings. Thank you. Okay, let's move on then to correspondence. The board did not receive any correspondence at the time that the agenda was put together. So we can move on to public comment. And again, if there's anybody that would like to speak on any topic regarding business of the school district, now's the time to do it. If you would prefer to wait until a specific item is brought forward in the agenda, you can wait until that time as well. Okay, could you wait until we do this? Because I've got about four requests to speak, and I'd like to start with them first. Carol, would you like to go first? Okay. I'm sorry, what? Okay, hang on just, can you hang on just a second, Carol? We've already done consensus on the order of business. We have a lot of people here. Would the board entertain the notion of changing the order of business so that we would talk about the 218 vote right now actually what I would want to do is see if there's any other public comment and then go to our district, our school representatives. Okay. Do I see a consensus on that? Yeah. Mr. Perry, yes? You want to come on up? Well, you know what? How about if we do it this way? Why don't we allow the students to go first, and then we'll do public comment. I would like to take general public comment, and then we'll move on to what would be item number 6, and we'll go forward on that. So, Hannah, would you like to go? And welcome.
Is it on? Okay. Do I have to pull it closer? Okay, can you hear me? Okay, good. Hi, I'm Hannah. I'm from Pacific Beach High School. And our first marking period is over this Friday. And that means that our first report cards are going out. And I, of course, am getting all straight A's. So other people are working really hard to make their credits. And all of our teachers have submitted teach grants for the fall round, and our school has submitted a total of 5 this year, so we're all keeping our fingers crossed. And our teachers are in the process of our self-study for the WASC accreditation, and they've been working really hard for that. And our visiting team is scheduled to come February 25th and 26th. And our art class on September 15th participated in Imad and Ari, and they wanted me to bring a picture of their beautiful work, and they all got credit for being there. You can pass that down. They all got credit for being there, and they looked like they had a lot of fun. I wasn't there, but. And our health class is studying alcohol and its effects right now, and Mrs. Jacobson organized for fetal alcohol infant simulators to be at our school. And it's a really good, kids actually get to go to jobs, on-site jobs, and learn about all the different careers. So it's really great. It's a really good learning tool, and it's in association with Big Brothers and Big Sisters. And Bob Burgo, the principal from Liberty High School in Paso, came and did a workshop at our school a couple weeks ago about true colors and learning styles, and it was a really good workshop. All of us really enjoyed it. He did it with the whole school, and our teachers are carrying over the true colors program in our normal classes. So he did a really good job with kicking that off for us. And our accelerated math program that we have going on, this is our first year for having it all year long. And we can actually pinpoint the students who are having problems passing the high school exit exam with this program, so they can get practices to help them with the problems that they're having if they can't pass. So that's really helpful. And Mrs. Coyner, who's our math teacher and our yearbook coordinator, did a really good job last year with our digital yearbook, and students got to create their own pages on the computer. And she's working on getting a digital camera for our school so we can do that again this year. And it was really fun making the yearbook last year. And Cal Poly Tutors started 2 weeks ago, and the students who need tutoring seem to really enjoy them, and they're doing a really good job. And a lot of the girls at our school see the tutors and now want help. And mock trial, we get our casebooks. I asked for help when I saw them. I'm going to be honest. I asked for math help, and I don't even need any more math credits. And she was like, what? No, you don't. So mock trial, we get our case books on October 10th. We're really excited about that. I was talking to Mr. Millar about it just a few minutes ago. We have a lot of really enthusiastic students about it this year, so we should have a really good team. It should be really fun. And our grafted apple tree that we planted last year in honor of a student who passed away, it is growing its first apple, and we're really happy about that. It's really big and beautiful, and that's it. We're really excited about this year.
Well, sure. And Mrs. Roger has a question, but I do want to welcome you. And just remind everybody who's watching and who's actually looking at us right now from the audience that we do have three.
Is one of the things that has been applied for with the teacher grant?
I'm not sure. I'd assume that it is because I think she was talking about it, but I'm not positive.
Is Mrs. Lopez here?
About that. No, she's not here today.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Chelsea.
Hi. Oh, it's good to see you guys again. A lot has happened since I last reported. September went by, and everything that we hoped happened went well. Our sports team did amazing. And now it's October, and it's our homecoming month, so we're really excited. Everything's going along smoothly right now. So hopefully it keeps going that way. But this summer we decided our theme would be people in uniform to honor all the people that serve our city, county, and country. And our spirit days are Patriotic Day, Neon Day, Imitation Day. We had to change the name, which is normally Poser Day. Sports Day and Black and Gold Day. And the homecoming week is October 15th through the 20th. And it ends with our dance in the new gym, and all the freshmen are excited because it's their first dance and they don't have to have a date. So the freshmen, each class gets a assigned like officer or whatever you want to call it, and the freshmen are park rangers, sophomores are policemen, juniors are firemen, and the seniors are Army, Navy, Marines, and Air Force. And our parade that we hold every year is October 19th, and we normally go down Hegera Street, but there's road construction this year, so we might have to take a detour, but hopefully the construction that day will be done at 3, so we can still go down Hegera. Our assembly, where the classes get to show off their talent and perform to the school, is the Monday of that week, so it's the 15th, and on the Friday before our parade, we have a rally. And then at the end of the parade, we have another rally, and it gets everyone pumped up, the cheerleaders, football team, and, like, our city just pumped up for the game that night. And we play a Tascadero for our homecoming. So hopefully we win. They're pretty good. And our homecoming elections are taking place this week. We voted today, and we'll vote tomorrow again. So we find out on Friday who the prince and princesses are, and the king and queen will vote for in next week, I think. And so we're excited to see how all of that turns out. Red Ribbon Week is the week after homecoming, so we're not planning in a theater. I've never been, so I don't really know what it's about. But I think it's like a performance of Shakespeare or something. And I heard it's pretty exciting. The new teachers seem to be working well with the students, and we hope that our seniors versus staff softball game on November 7th will get them more pumped up for our school. And, you know, the seniors are going to win, so it's okay. The following students have been honored in the National Merit Scholarship Program, and we have a lot this year, which is really good. Shannon Allen, Kristen Bazaley, Annie Latson, Morgan Madren, Parson Afisi, Spencer Van Hoos, and then the semifinalists were Samantha Alford, Chris Yonke, and Gordon Freerit or something. I don't know how to say his last name. I'm sorry if you're watching, Gordon. And we have a bus and safety drill on October 24th to inform all the kids, although we've been through them since kindergarten, I think. And on the 18th, we have the principal's parent advisory meeting in the library. So that's about it that's going on with Slo High this month, and we're excited.
Wow, Chelsea, thank you very much. Great. Mrs. Dickinson.
It's great to hear from the enthusiastic high school students. You guys help us all remember why we're here. I had a comment about the uniforms. That sounds fun, and I think it's fun to pick out all those activities. I was wondering, for seniors who are conscientious objectors, what kind of uniform maybe they could wear. Maybe they could wear healthcare scrubs or something.
I'm not exactly sure if they're like going to wear the uniform, but I think for the different classes, they're going to try and do like just like for Army, just like the shirt that says Army across it. And I'm not really sure what's going on. I'm not in charge of that this year, so I wish I could answer that.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, let's move on then to public comment. And what I'd ask right now is for people who have comments on other than the Los Osos 218 assessment vote. So is there anybody that would like to address the board on an item that's not on the agenda right now?
It is on the agenda, but it's not 218.
Do you want to wait, Charlie, or do you want
to... There aren't more teachers here to discuss this. And I think part of it is that the teachers are involved in a culture of problem solve and move on. And so what we tend to do in our classroom every minute is say, oh, gosh, you know, Jim Bob's having a hard time, so I'll go stand next to Jim Bob, and, okay, well, I'll move his seat, well, I'll do this. It's just like, boom, boom, change that to make it work, and then move on. And by the time the day's over, we've made so many changes that often we don't even know what they all are by the end of the day. And I think that's part of the deal with the curriculum and the standards, is that we make it work the best we can, and then we have to move on and plan the next lesson. So often we don't show up even when invited, and I really appreciate the invitation. And I wish more of us were able to be here to do that. But what I think when I look at our curriculum, which as I understand it is pretty much state mandated, though I could be incorrect in some areas there, I look at it and I look at what I believe and what I see on our district website, and I experience cognitive dissonance. On Dr. Valentine's statement on the website that our goal is to provide students with the best opportunity to realize their personal ambitions. And if everyone's doing the exact same thing, I don't see how that's getting us there. That our middle schools are about seeing, doing, and exploring in the context of core subject matter. Boy, I wish we were, but the way the standards are, because there are so many to do in so little time, we don't get nearly the amount of doing and exploring that, in my humble opinion, we really need in order to understand what we're supposed to be learning. And then in our mission statement, that we're educating students to become self-sufficient individuals who are capable of making significant contributions to society and managing change in the culturally diverse world community. And that's kind of a big global thing. And it concerns me greatly that the way our standards work and the way our assessment works, we're focused on very discrete bits of knowledge. And the way we assess how we're doing has nothing to do with the culturally diverse world community or people becoming self-sufficient individuals or being able to make decisions. So I have some cognitive dissonance around those. And our last statement on the mission statement is that we're working to give all individuals the opportunity to realize their full intellectual, physical...
San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. I just wanted to follow up Mr. Perez's comments. We appreciate this district's direction as far as being able to involve teachers to go ahead and select essential standards at the different levels in school. We appreciate that. We'd like to see teachers involved in talking about the standards. And as far as what standards do we have to follow and what ones don't we have to follow, and who is making up these standards? I'd like teachers involved in asking some of those questions, some of the difficult questions about there's so many standards, we can't go ahead and teach to all of the standards. So when we're selecting which ones we're going to focus on at these different sites, I think teachers who are closest to the students really need to be in on that decision making. The other point I'd like to make is that recently, I'm sure you're aware of the Pelosi-Miller move to go ahead and reauthorize No Child Left Behind. Teachers are disappointed in that decision. We want No Child Left Behind erased. We want it rewritten. We want it reauthorized. We'll be mounting a campaign to change their minds, and it just goes to show you this isn't a Democrat or Republican issue. It truly is a national issue. When the majority of teachers are against a national program, you have to question the authenticity of that program. This board, I want to congratulate because they've been proactive more than reactive, that they've gone ahead and formally spoken about No Child Left Behind and have protested and have written letters. So I want to thank you for doing that. Teachers do appreciate your efforts on our behalf. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bedrigian. Come on up.
Hi. This working? Yeah. My name is Jerry Ramsey. I'm here with a group of San Luis Obispo High School parents. And the thing that we understand will be on the agenda in the future is regarding the PE regulation that now mandates that students who are participating in athletics still have to take that slow high school. Further limiting electives doesn't do that. As I said, I understand this is going to be an agenda item in the future, and so we're not going to spend too much time here. You can think of this as a preview of coming attractions once you put it on the agenda. And the first thing that I wanted was Ann Vernocchi is going to come up and just read some information that she came up with from the Ed Code and talk a little bit about how she thinks that would affect the decision.
Hi, I'm Ann Vernacchia. Several weeks ago when I was asked to attend a meeting on the PE issue that has affected our freshmen and sophomores at San Luis High, I decided to research exactly what that mandate said. And in doing that, I started to read the Ed Code. As I was doing that, I came across Ed Code 51242, which says, "The governing board of a school district may exempt any four-year or senior high school pupil from attending courses of physical education if the pupil is engaged in a regular school-sponsored interscholastic athletic program carried on wholly or partially after regular school hours." As I read this, I was shocked. I thought to myself, how is it possible that nobody seems to be applying this to the situation that all of us are so worried about? And then I moved forward and started to email it off to the other members of the group to see if there was any chance that we could possibly use this and find some wiggle room in the problem that we are encountering. Thank you.
After we got that from Ann, a bunch of us started calling or emailing schools where we knew somebody, or we also targeted schools who had been Blue Ribbon winners. We've so far only heard back from 10 of them, but of the 10 schools we contacted asking them about their PE program, 20% of the schools still require 2 years of PE regardless of whether the students are participating in athletics. 20% of the schools are requiring athletes to participate in PE only for 1 year, and they get a waiver for the second year. And 60% of the schools require no PE if the student does four seasons in sports, so you are allowed to replace those PE units. And again, this is what we would like San Luis to go to. The first argument we'd like to make is that this new regulation forces students who are involved in more than one campus sport to participate in too much physical activity, actually. That, for instance, a student who is participating in a varsity sport may practice in the morning and also practice in the afternoon, and then midway through the day they would have another 70 minutes worth of physical activity. And that's not physically healthy. And what it also means for a student who's participating,
that you probably used up your 3 minutes, so why don't we let the other folks talk? Not you personally, but the other people have not, so go ahead.
Okay. While Ann spoke to the letter of the change, I'd like to speak to the spirit of the change in the introducing new PE requirements. And we understand that it's about promoting physical fitness and having physically fit children today and in the future and have them follow lifelong physical activities. Now, according to this, if this is the spirit of it, we actually want to see if the new regulation that kicks in actually supports the spirit. If we look at the spirit, the at-risk population would be those students that are not engaged in physical activity on a regular basis, and not the population of physically fit athletes. Since we clearly can differentiate between the at-risk population and the physically fit or athletic population, it would appear to be at least a misallocation of resources to service a population that doesn't need servicing. And yet the regulation only targets student athletes. That's the only change. The only students that are impacted by the change in the regulation are athletes. Now, if we think of it this way, if we were trying to increase literacy in California, we would not target AP English students, nor would we target students in K through 6 who are above grade level in reading. If we were trying to be more competitive in math and science, we would not choose to remediate those students who already excel in those areas. Likewise, if we are trying to enhance physical fitness and encourage lifelong physical activity, we should not target the physically fit and those who are already on the path to lifelong physical activity. So I would recommend that we not target our student athletes for additional PE classes, and that we should also not target these scholar athletes for a reduction in their elective options, which is what Lynn O'Connor will be speaking to, and she'll speak right behind me. Thank you for your time.
Sure, thank you.
You're probably tired of hearing us talk about this, so we have a graph. and I'd like to call your attention on the graph, in particular to the one red square that's available on the freshman and sophomore year. So what this is a map of the curriculum for all 4 years. And it shows a free elective, which is the red square, a potential elective space, which is now taken up by PE. And the triangle in the red square is used for the certainly develop an interest in art, music, drama, woodworking, shop. Also, this decreases the odds. Having so few openings, it's going to be much more difficult for them to get any elective because they have to work around their core classes. And this is challenging. This was challenging prior to revoking this change in the PE requirement. So anyway, peruse this, and if you have any questions about it, thank you.
Okay.
Hi, thank you for your time. I believe I'm the last person to speak here today. My name is Catherine Rogers, and I would just like to speak on the impact on our music program that this PE requirement will have. My son happens to illustrate how this works. He is a water polo player, but he's also in the band. And so this year he would have had three electives, but now he will have one elective because he takes band, which is considered an elective, and his PE he no longer gets as an elective, and he's taking water polo. And what this will do for him and for the school for next year is cause student-athletes to have to make a choice, because by the time they're a sophomore, he will already have banked two of his electives for the future that he should have taken driver's ed this year, he should have taken healthy living this year, but he'll have to take them as a junior or senior in order to be in band. So next year, he'll have to make a choice, do I stay in band or do I stay in water polo and swimming, which is required of water polo players, and our band, which is just now coming into its own and getting larger and under Ms. Jeske's leadership, will suffer because our student athletes will start having to drop out of band as a result of our PE regulation. So we hope that you'll take the time to consider this, and then in the future we'd love to address you again. Thank you.
You know, I'm going to make a statement first, and then I'm... Okay, if you could make it brief, please.
Is it really true that they have to take PE the freshman and sophomore year? It's just during the four years.
I'm going to actually ask Dr. Valent if Dr. Valentine can clarify that. And I would just like to point out to everybody here that Mr. Spadafore and I, and I think I can speak for the rest of the board, have taken this issue very seriously. Dr. Valentine will explain how the district got to this place. I'm sorry, what? And I believe I can include the rest of the board that in a way, you're preaching to the choir, because I know that, that the members of this board have, we do want to see this issue resolved, and I am sensitive to every one of your complaints. As a parent of someone at Morro Bay High School, I can attest to you that the fewer electives that are made available to students because of requirements, the more we straitjacket our students. And so, Dr. Valentine, with that introduction, would you explain how we got here, if you would, please, and then what we're doing to address this issue?
No pressure there.
Not a single piece of it.
First of all, staff is intending on bringing this item back at the first meeting in, well, probably at the second meeting in October for discussion. So, audience, take note of that date. I'm not sure what the date is at this point. The 16th. I'm hearing the 16th, but I'm not affirming that. At any rate, the gist of the issue is that we were reviewed on a consolidated compliance review. That's a review by the state to see that all of your curricular ducks are in a row. Within a matter of weeks of the release of the PE curriculum, we at that time were found out of compliance based upon the new PE curriculum standards, which nobody in the state had had any chance to adjust to. And one of the issues that was brought forward was that we were giving credit for PE in athletics, for student athletes. The new curriculum covered a span of objectives that was determined by the reviewer to be broader than the coverage of any given sport, and therefore we were told that we could no longer offer PE credit for athletics. We did not ask the question at that time, could we exempt students from PE who were involved in athletics, and I appreciate the input that we've received from parents, and we've pursued that also both through our own staff and through legal staff to get an interpretation of what that exemption means, and it sounds like it means pretty much what it said, and that is that students can be exempted from PE who participate in athletics under certain conditions. That is what, when we bring this item back to the board, we will be processing. Between now and then, when we bring it back, we'll have a staff recommendation about whether to initiate and launch that exemption clause for physical education. There are other issues involved in physical education which probably would do better to be brought forward in a full board item. At any rate, maybe I'll leave 4 years of PE. That test is given in the ninth grade. It suggests to us that there is some push to have PE taken in the ninth grade, number one, so that the student can be best prepared to take that test, and number two, in the event that the student fails, he or she still has 4 years of high school left in which to take PE. So we are looking into what the implications of that new law is, and at this point in time, as I said, there's been no definition of what passing the test is, so we have no idea really how many students we would be looking at as having a four-year requirement without that metric to look at. That's about all I know.
Okay. Yes, please.
If I had a son or daughter who was choosing between second trimester band or PE, and they were freshmen and athletes, I would think they probably will pass a physical fitness test, and I'd put them in band or music, thinking that this is probably going to get worked out later.
You know, and again, I just wanted to thank you all for coming out here, and the board understands exactly what you're saying, and so please, when you see this item come back on the agenda, come back. We're always welcoming people who come here and address the board. And October 16th, Mr. Spadafor says. And I'm not sure, is the meeting going to be here or is the meeting going to be in Los Osos? The meeting will be at Del Mar School in Morro Bay. So please put that on your calendars, and we look forward to having you back and participating in the discussion that we'll have on this item. Thank you very much.
Mr. Unger?
Yes, Mr.
Unger. I have a question.
Yes, sir.
I was not aware that not only was this coming back to the board, that there had been a major change in what the previous status of this issue had been. And I was a little surprised because some of the folks who spoke to us tonight knew this was coming back to the board. So I'm a little confused by all that.
I believe Dr. Valentine? I thought we had a future agenda item that the board had requested that we would talk physical education. Am I mistaken on that? Yeah, it's targeted for October 16th. I'm not sure what changed, Mr. Millar.
I believe there was information about this in the Friday packet. Was there not?
Oh, the exempting students piece? Yeah, we did try to communicate that.
Thanks, and, you know, again, please feel free to stay.
That's all right. I'll get over it. We bring to you tonight a item related to the Los Osos Sewer Assessment Levy, and it's directly related to a ballot that was mailed to the district, and it calls for the district to cast a vote on the basis of its ownership of three parcels of property within the Los Osos Sewer District. And so we're here tonight to ask the board to cast that vote, and we're basing our staff report on the actual ballot itself. And what it says is, as property owners within the proposed assessment district, the school district has an opportunity to vote on the matter, which states, shall the Board of Supervisors of the County of San Luis Obispo establish the proposed San Luis Obispo Water Wastewater Assessment District Number 1, levy an assessment not to exceed the amount set forth above on the parcel identified, issue bonds, or incur other debt obligations in the amount of unpaid assessments, and proceed with the financing for the proposed public wastewater system improvement project. The amount of the assessments that we're talking about can be found on the second page of the staff item, and the estimated maximum costs to the San Luis Coastal Unified School Districts for its three parcels would be on Baywood, $673,461.05, for Monarch Grove, $534.427.82, and for Sunnyside, $534,427.82, and for Sunnyside property, $326,104.40. We're not sure of the exact outcome should this proposal fail, but there has been some comment and position stated for Regional Quality Water Board that would proceed with its prohibition against continuing waste discharges for certain property owners in the Los Osos and Baywood Park communities. This would either make the properties be required to contain and truck any wastewater offsite to an approved disposal facility, or absolutely render the facilities uninhabitable. What we have evaluated in a brief period of time, and certainly it's not the beginning or end-all of all opportunities of differences, but if they were to prohibit waste discharge of groundwater into groundwater of Los Osos and Baywood, the various alternatives, we have a recommendation that based upon the facility and fiscal impacts to the San Luis Coastal Unified School District, staff recommends that the Board of Education establish a yes vote on assessment ballot measure 218 for the three properties which we have ownership of.
And we have several requests to address the board, and I'll start with Carol Camo. Carol?
Good evening. My name is Carol Camo. I'm a third grade teacher at Baywood Elementary, and I live in Los Osos and own a home there. My husband and I voted yes on the 218 assessment, and I'm here to encourage you to do the same. Our school district will risk serious financial consequences if the 218 fails and the project reverts back to a bankrupt and currently ineffectual Los Osos Community Services District. I'm concerned because our school district will be subject to fines imposed by the Regional Water Quality Control Board if an appropriate project is not completed in a timely manner. It's time to trust the county process and protect our school district finances by voting yes on the 218. On another matter, I'm here to encourage our district to continue to be proactive in water conservation efforts. A level 3 water severity has been placed on our community because we're overdrafting our groundwater supply, which is causing saltwater intrusion. Promoting water conservation in our schools is the right thing to do for the environment, and it will save the schools money. Last spring, we began promoting water conservation at Baywood, and I'd like to share with you some of the things we've implemented. We began publishing water conservation tips in our weekly newsletter, The News Bear. Erin Fay, who's a kindergarten teacher, and I will be working to make sure that each class at Baywood gets water conservation lessons, which are tied to the state science standards. At our Spring Art Science Expo, the Los Osos Community Services District set up a display about water conservation and handed out free water conservation kits, which include low-flow showerheads. Jill Falcone and Sammy the Steelhead from the County Stormwater Pollution Prevention Program also attended the event. Last spring, I also spoke with George Milanis from the LOCSD Utilities Department regarding water usage in our schools. Mr. Milanis said he would be happy to come to Baywood. Someone meet with Mr. Milanis to discuss how we can conserve water at our schools, especially in regards to irrigation. Thank you for your time, and I really do appreciate all of the service that you guys have given on our school board.
Thank you, Mrs. Camo. Cheryl Dove.
Can I just mention one thing before we have the next speaker? Carol, I just wanted to mention to you, you may not know this, but Marilyn Rogers on our board has been our eyes and conscience. She's a fellow neighbor of yours from Los Osos in terms of raising this issue, and there was a past board meeting when several items were discussed about further steps. So I think the community involvement and the fact that Marilyn has really been driving this for the board and for the school district will be important, that cooperation, just so you know.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm aware of that. Yeah.
Okay. Mrs. Dove?
Thank you. I'm Cheryl Dove. I teach first grade at Baywood School in Los Osos. And I've lived in Baywood, I've lived in Los Osos for 31 years. And I'm here tonight to ask you also to vote yes on the 218 sewer assessment. And this will support, as you know, the development of a wastewater treatment plant through the leadership of the County of San Luis Obispo. And the community of Los Osos has gone through this divisive issue for so many years, and this, I believe, this 218 assessment will help solve the problems that the community and the environment have had to deal with. So thank you very much.
Great. Thank you very much, Mrs. Dove. Don Bearden.
Good evening. My name is Don Bearden. I live in Los Osos in the Prohibition Zone. I have passed out a little flyer to you, and I was going to read it all off, but your staff has made the same argument. I will urge you to vote yes on the Proposition 218 assessment. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. Gretchen Clark.
Good evening, President Unger, members of the school board. My name is Gretchen Clark. I thank you for the opportunity to address you this evening during public comment on the proposed Los Osos sewer assessment levy. My husband Richard and I reside in Los Osos and have a son who attended San Luis Coastal Schools from second grade through high school. As former active participants in the San Luis Coastal Unified Schools and as taxpayers, and yes, part of community outreach efforts, including holding public forums, workshops, and soliciting community members for technical advisory committees. We believe that the San Luis Obispo County Public Works Department has the know-how and the interagency expertise that are required to see this project through. In comparison to the Los Osos Community Services District, the county is financially solvent and has been working to secure public funding in their efforts to serve both the letter and the spirit of Assemblyman Blakeslee's bill. However, the county needs a majority vote from property owners to proceed. The district's financial health and the health and safety of students who attend the schools within the Prohibition Zone would be best served, we believe, by having a completed wastewater project. The county is the appropriate lead agency, and we hope the school board will indeed agree by voting yes on the 218 assessment. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mrs. Clark. Is there anybody else from the public that would like to address the board on this issue?
Okay. Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board for board discussion. Mr. Peter, did you have your...
I'm prepared to make a motion.
Okay.
I'd like to...
You know what? Could I... Would you all do me the honor of making the motion as a Los Osos resident?
Absolutely.
Okay. I actually have a couple of comments first, but a concern that I have is when I'm looking at this, if the school board, if the school district is, if in fact the fines go through and we're charged $5,000 per piece of property, I was just figuring it just at a school year, that's $15,000 a day. That's about $2,790,000 worth of fines that we'd be accruing over 186 school days. I have some concerns, too, about if, in fact, the State Water Quality Board acts as they've said they'd act, if we'd have to close the schools in Los Osos, because I don't know how we would provide for the health and safety of our students. I don't know how we'd be able to provide food for our students in Los Osos because we wouldn't be able to have people wash their hands in order to operate the cafeterias. So those are just some of the concerns I have. One question that I did have, and I would ask that it be addressed at some point, if you look at page number 12, where we look at future student populations, we have actually this out. It looks like the build-out of the schools, 600 at Baywood. The number 6, is there a second?
I'll second.
The motion's been made by me. It's been seconded by Mr. Peter. Is there any other discussion from board members? Okay. Mrs. Roger.
Well, I don't have a lot to say, but I was really hopeful that we would get a legal decision that would say that there was a conflict and I didn't have to vote on this and that I could let the other able board members make the decision. But the truth is I do have to vote on it, and I'm voting in what I believe is the best interest of the district. And acknowledging that I know a number of people whose opinions I respect very much that fall on both sides of this issue in Los Osos.
Thank you, Mrs. Roger. Any other comments from the board? Seeing none, I'll take the vote. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 7-0. Thank you. Let's move on then to item number 3, which is a status of the state budget. Mr. Miller?
We did miss the AB 602, but for simplicity purposes, I don't have anything to report on the status of the state budget this time.
Okay, very good. Let's move on then to item number 1, which is the discussion of AB 602, and I will be exiting from this discussion. Mrs. Holmes or Dr. Valentine will be calling me when this discussion is over.
So to proceed in Chris's stead, I believe that Russell Miller will present this item to the board and to the audience. Actually, Dr. Valentine.
Well, very briefly, we shared last meeting that staff has been working to bring sufficient information to the board in order to bring the board to a comfort level where you can make a decision on our proposal to bring back 5 special education classes from the County Office of Education program. We shared with the board what we think are sort of the salient issues of the conversation, the first one being program quality. The generalization that we shared is that we believe that being in direct contact with our students for whom we are... Got to the issue of program cost, we shared our belief, and Mr. Buckman is right that there are unknowns in this, but our belief that we can bring these programs in at the same or lesser cost to what we are paying now. The board is well aware that we fund and all the other school districts in the county fund the special ed programs that are offered through the county. The change in the funding model, which has sort of prompted all of this discussion, is that rather than having those dollars flow to the county to create special education programs, those dollars now flow to the school districts who may either purchase programs from the county or provide their own. We believe there's sufficient duplication of administrative costs, clerical costs, custodial costs that we have built into our school district at this time and that would be used to supervise and provide services to these programs, that we can bring these programs in for less than what we're paying now by purchasing those programs through the county. That said, there are unknowns in this, and we wanted to make an effort to let the board know that even if we were not able to bring this in at a savings to the school district in direct program costs, we believe the advantages of program quality and of control over liability would be sufficient to move our recommendation forward anyway. We looked at the issues of program staffing. Rick has shared a number of things that we know at this point. We know that as programs come over to the school district, that the most likely scenario is that we are obligated, and we welcome the obligation, to bring the county staff along with those programs, to staff those programs. Again, that applies to the major staffing for each of the classrooms. What we don't know is the exact details of the staffing sources for auxiliary services to those programs, whether it's occupational therapists or whether it's psychologists or whether it's nursing help and so forth, which of course are portioned out in sort of partial full-time equivalents to those classes or partial staffing to those classes. We're not exactly sure whether we will wind up being responsible for locating that partial staffing ourselves or whether we would be subscribing to that partial staffing through the County Office of Education. In either case, we believe school program Chris Jesperson, which exists on the old Pacheco campus, we have since worked out an agreement with the county that would allow us to continue in that facility for at least a year, so we're comfortable that that program also will not change location. We wanted to be straightforward in sharing the notion that special education is problematic under the best of circumstances. We have no expectation that the assumption of these programs will not develop challenges that will be difficult to meet. But we feel comfortable that we are in as good a position to meet and address those problems if we are in control of those programs than we would be if someone else were in control of those programs. And so we promise no elimination of problems in taking these programs over, but we do believe that we are in a strong position to address them. We also shared with the board that all of the comparisons that we have brought to you to date have been comparisons based upon a moment in time, and that we would anticipate that circumstances will change, the number of students will change, the types of disabilities will change, the types of staffing that are needed to address those disabilities will change. We certainly hope that as the board considers whether or not to bring these programs over to our school district, that the board does not expect that the future complexity of these programs will look the same as the current complexity of these programs. They will not. The last thing we mentioned was the decisions yet to be made. We were talking about, again, the Chris Jesperson preschool program. Because of the location issue, we believe that's resolved. And part of our recommendation tonight is to bring all five programs forward. I would only add that, as the board is aware, we have already declared our intention to bring back the five classes because we had to do that back before the 1st of July to meet the initial deadline. But we did so in full knowledge, knowing that we would have until the 15th of October to rescind any of those take-backs. And so our recommendation to the board tonight is to consider and provide us with direction. Our recommendation would be to not rescind our request to take those five classes back, and in fact, to take those five classes back.
Thank you. Dr. Valentine, questions? Comments? Mr. Millar?
I just want to, the recommendation.
A second. We have a motion and a second. Any other comments by the board? Go ahead. Fine. Okay, we'll go ahead here then. Bruce, you can come up and speak to this. But Ms. Dickinson?
I thought Marilyn Roger had a good question that I still don't really hear an answer to about all the materials. And do we have to buy those ownership from the county? Yeah, ownership of all the materials. And I still wonder about the preschool. The argument that these are our children doesn't say it all to me because they live in our district and they're coming to our school soon, but they are being provided for. I'm just wondering why we want to do the preschool so much, especially since there's little issues with the site and all that.
Yeah, it's a good question. Our special ed responsibility to seek and serve students with disabilities covers the ages from age 3 to age 22, so we are responsible for providing services to students who are in that 3 and 4-year-old range. We believe there's some programmatic logic to being responsible for the students while they are 3 and 4 and preparing them to enter our 5-year-old program in kindergarten and our first grade program and so forth, that the continuity issue is a plus. Plus the fact all the issues of liability and cost and program quality still hold true even for preschool.
In terms of the supplies, there are 3 types of supplies that are located within these classrooms. One are supplies that teachers always and normally buy. They belong to the teachers. There are supplies that are paid for by the SELPA. And those are low-incidence equipment and supplies provided for specific children. And those supplies and equipment follow the children by agreement within the SELPA. Then there are supplies that have been purchased through the County Office of Ed Purchasing Department, primarily with funding provided by districts. And it would be our position on those types of purchases that because of the excess cost model, because of the money that flowed directly to the county through the earnings of our ADA and population, those supplies that were purchased for that classroom should transfer with that classroom when we absorb the program. That's not set in concrete, and certainly there would be conversation about it, but we intend to have that conversation. I'm giving you more of a position that we have about that than we have an agreement about.
Okay. Our serious concern is right now is with our nurses. Our nurses are overworked right now. The National Nurses Association calls for a ratio of 750 to 1, and our nurses are right now at a ratio of 2,250 to 1, and we're concerned about that. And now bringing on these schools, we're hoping, or maybe we see this as an opportunity, that this would be a good time to lower that ratio and look at hiring more nurses for our district. Thank you
Mr. Bedrigian. Ms. Dickinson?
That was actually going to be my next question, too. Or actually, I'm asking for an affirmation. I just wanted to confirm that we're not expecting custodial people, workers, and administration and nurses and everyone just to absorb the extra, but we are fully taking on the responsibility of funding extra services for these classrooms. I just wondered about that.
Well, it's certainly going to be a combination of both. We believe that we do have an infrastructure in place that can handle expanding to include some of these. For instance, the board has hired and created a new job classification of bus driver service worker, which essentially is available to provide custodial assistance above and beyond the typical formula for custodial assistance. We believe that that expansion of that particular capability will be useful in accommodating the additional classrooms and so forth that need to be taken care of. Regarding administration, where we have site administrators in place, we've met with the administration at those sites and we've talked with them. They have indicated that they're very familiar with the classes that are there, that they feel comfortable in their relationship both with the teachers and the parents and the kids there, and welcome the addition of those kids into the school community. And they understand that there will be additional IEPs and that there will be additional parent conferences. We're talking about 34 kids, pretty high needs kids, though, coming into the school district total. When we look at, and this was the part we were sharing earlier, when we look at those kind of auxiliary services, nursing, psychologists, occupational therapists, speech pathologists, those kinds of services, where even now in the class, if we can continue to subscribe to those services, we would anticipate there'd be very little cost change because we would simply be paying for the services that we already receive.
Okay. Ms. Rogers?
Thank you. I've spent a considerable amount of time, guys, on this one. And first off, I really feel like I want to say, make sure that I say, I've spoken to a number of people that are county staff. I've been to the classes at Smith, Los Osos Middle School, San Luis Obispo High School. I've spoken to many, many people, asked for their questions, asked them, had them answered by staff. I really appreciate the willingness that all of the people who are, that I talk to in the county program, special education program, the willingness that they had to receive me in their classes, speak openly with me, share their concerns if they had them. I can't tell you, if you go to these classes and observe for any length of time, these people are just really doing God's work. It's for very little, small mini steps of rewards have to go a long way. And the day, if you're spending the day in a classroom with a child who is melting down for 3 or 4 hours and just screaming and crying, and you go on and try to teach, I think they must be exhausted at the end of the day. They have my complete admiration and respect, and I want to be sure that anyone who is watching this understands that, as do our staff in our special day classes. Anyone who chooses special education as a vocation is a very special individual, I think. That said, I do have some concerns. I don't think that we're going to realize cost savings off of this. And I think if we elect to go this route and to bring these classes back or bring them into the district, bring the students home to us, the best that we can do for our students. These are our kids. I'm willing to take the leap of faith if our staff believe that we can provide excellent services, and if our staff believe that that taking ownership and being in a position of decision making and taking responsibility and having control benefits our students rather than contracting out these services to the county office, I'm willing to trust that our staff knows what is right, understands the difficulties inherent in this undertaking, is going into it with their eyes wide open, and I'm prepared to support them in that endeavor. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Marilyn. Mr. Buckland?
Thank you. Having seen the work that the County Office of Education does and the commitment of that staff, I have to say that I think they've done a tremendous job. However, I think there's tremendous benefit to bringing us as a school board, us as a district, closer to the families and the children who reside within our district.
Thank you. And Mr. Miller.
Finally, for the board's purposes, there's a handout that's been placed in front of you. It was a report that was contracted for by the county SELPA-wide,
and it was performed by Paul Goldfinger, who is Vice President for School Services of California and is recognized throughout the state as an expert on special ed. And I would just read to you that his analysis of the funding model that we're proposing to do, he says the model that allocates most funds directly to districts has several clear advantages. First, if funding has been equalized among member districts, this model starts with treating all districts equally by providing the same funding per ADA. Second, by allocating funding directly to districts, there are no fiscal incentives to utilize subsidized services. And third, districts clearly have an incentive to serve their own pupils. In his work with many other SELPAs on allocation models, he states, I have come to appreciate the benefits from the model that allocates most funding directly to districts for its simplicity, its lack of incentives to utilize subsidized.
Do a tremendous job in many difficult situations in providing programs to children with special needs, and I believe that probably we'll find out soon the majority of the board feels very strongly that the direction that the district is taking is in the best interest of the students. And with that, I know that most importantly, as a district, we must continue to be critical and provide comprehensive reviews of all the individual education programs that we create for these students, that we fully evaluate all issues in a very self-effacing way, that we look at all sides of any and all positions as it relates to our students, so we can provide the best education and services possible. And I think when you hear what Marilyn had said and when you consider what this means, I believe that's the genesis of this move, because we continue with that mission to serve a group of students that need the best that can be provided. So if there are no other comments, I'll move to call a vote on the motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? It passes unanimously 6-0. And to seamlessly continue with tonight's agenda while Mr. Unger is being called from whatever bar he has pasted himself to, we will go to number 4 under resolutions, the delegation of signature authority. You're on. Russell, there's no rest for the wicked. Get back and do your job. Come on.
I move resolution 020708, delegation of signature authority, a routine matter that comes before us every year.
This is second. On page 4.1. We have a second by Ms. Rogers, I believe. Was that what that was?
That's what that
was. Any discussion? Seeing none?
Routine.
We do have a discussion. Yes. We have
it's
a roll
routine,
call.
It's routine, but we do have to take roll call.
Thank you for doing this very much.
Mr. Millar.
Aye.
Mrs. Roger.
Aye.
Mr. Buckman.
Aye.
Mr. Spadafore.
Aye.
Mrs. Dickinson.
Aye.
Mr. Peter.
Aye.
The vote passes unanimously 6-0. Moving on to item number 5, determination of sufficient textbooks and instructional materials. Ms. Delkiskamp. Rita, thank you.
Thank you. A public hearing was held on this item on September 18th. And this item, the committee will review and evaluate selected K-6 science textbooks this fall and recommend a K-6 science textbook adoption by this November of 2007. And so the recommendation is that the Board of Education approve this resolution number 030708, determination of sufficient textbooks and instructional materials.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Delkiskamp. Any discussion or motion?
Actually, let me make a motion so we can get to the discussion. I move that we approve the resolution.
Motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Ms. Dickinson. Discussion, questions?
I just hope that science materials have a lot of hands-on experiments. They usually do for elementaries.
I know that our teachers are developing evaluation criteria this next week, and it has been mentioned that they're very interested in making sure that what we adopt has a kit that will involve kids in hands-on activities.
Sounds good.
Mr. Buckman?
Okay. So it's either the lack of caffeine because I haven't had coffee in 2 weeks or I'm getting older, but can you refresh my memory as to why we have this deficiency in these textbooks?
Sure, and it's part of the resolution. If you turn to page 5.3, at the top it says, whereas the insufficient textbooks or materials listed above were not provided at each school due to the following reasons. And we had stated that the state's K-8 science instructional materials adoption occurred in November 2006, and there was an initial committee that was convened, but the evaluation of those materials was not completed.
Was that a local committee or a state committee?
Our local committee.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Buckman?
You got me. Yes.
Mrs. Dickinson? Mr. Peter? Mr. Spadafore?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes. Passes 6-0. Next on the agenda is Spadafore Microphone Township.
Thank you. Next on the agenda is item number 7, curriculum standards adoption. Dr. Matakovich?
Mr. President, if I may, I don't know if we want to wait for Mr. Unger to arrive or continue.
Well, we've done so well without him, but I think
pleasure.
That may be.
He may have misunderstood me.
That's perfect. It's like Hollywood. Action. We're back on, and the meeting is being resumed. We're on item number 7, curriculum standards. Dr. Matakovich.
Thank you, Mr. Spadafore. The board asked for staff to review how curriculum standards are developed. These standards have been developed through the California Department of Education, through committee work that is made up of content specialists from the K-12 level, college level, and with the business community's input. Frameworks are developed that set goals and curricular standards. Course descriptions are developed, and along with those course descriptions come standards. These standards are presented to the State Board of Education for approval, and once approved, the State Accountability System, our testing system, our API, AYP standards are based. State funding for instructional materials also align to the content standards, and the funding is allocated to materials that are aligned. Districts have a choice to either adopt these standards or develop more rigorous ones. Our district has chosen to adopt the state content standards. You as a board have taken action to adopt the standards in the core academic areas of English language arts, mathematics, history, social science, science, physical education, and visual and performing arts. We have a board policy, 6141, with the administrative regulations, and I presented them with this item as reference. Mrs. Dickinson posed a question that I'd like to address, and that is, are the standards reviewed or revised? And the answer to that question from the State Department is that there is no revision of any of the content standards since they've been originally adopted. They intend to have them stay in place, and they have no intention to review or revise them. Though what you need to know is when we go through a curriculum cycle, our staff takes a look at the content standards and reviews.
Really amazing, no revision since. And what year was that that we started standards? When were they developed?
Well, they're on a cycle, Adrian, and each of them it's an 8-year cycle, and so the adoption date of each of them I don't have on my mind right now, but.
Does that mean they are revised every 8 years, or they're not revised since they started?
No, according to the State Department, they've adopted the standards, and those standards hold.
They didn't all come on board at the same time, so some are more current than others.
Well, I think this is an appropriate topic for us. And when I look at the board policy 6141, the first sentence says, the Board of Education accepts responsibility for establishing what students should learn. So, and what is taught and how it is taught is curriculum. And that has to be, you know, the main thing that schools are about. So thank you for entertaining this discussion, because I think it's central to everything that we do. And I think about it a lot, and I wrote all this last night, which is like, as a writer, this is something that you would edit down. But if you really want to look at, like, number 8, what can the school board do to ensure that content standards are springboards to inspiration rather than railroad tracks to standardization? You know, what is our role in the face of all these mandates and pressures from tests? I don't know what an outcome of our discussion would be either. I mean, for people like Walter, we're like, why are we discussing this? I care about you, Walter. Would we want to change?
Get me home.
You know, what was that?
Thank you. Get me home.
Would we want to change board policy? You know, you can go home if you want. Or administrative, you know, influence administrative regulations or not. Just looking at them, it says the Board of Education accepts responsibility for establishing what students should learn. The board shall adopt a district curriculum which reflects district philosophy, which is in our mission statement, and this is kind of what Mr. Perez was talking about, responds to student needs and abilities, and is consistent with the requirements of law. Insofar as this is possible, this curriculum shall also reflect the desires of the community and the needs of society as a whole. One thing I did was to email Dr. Truesdell, who teaches at Cal Poly and helps to train teachers. And she wrote back on an email, it is widely researched and accepted, and she gives a list of references, that all students do not and cannot learn at the same rate. To assume so is to set district schools and inevitably certain students up for failure, thus effectively lowering test scores and in turn AYPs. Once policymakers start paying attention to decades of research on the subject, then perhaps our students will learn the standards at the rate and in the style most appropriate for them. When Bruce was talking about teachers deciding which standards. I know there's a big trend right now for whole departments to get together and select standards. Personally, I mean, I think that's fine. But I still think, you know, when the rubber hits the road and the teacher's in the classroom, the teacher is making assessments. And there's so much in the administrative regulations about test data, but most decisions in the classroom are not made from, they're made from observation, listening to children, students read, listening to their comments and discussions, watching their body language, watching as they're working on assignments what they're doing with it, the kind of questions they're asking or not asking. Change what you're going to do tomorrow. And in my lesson plan book, if I wrote down the whole week, I'd erase it every day as I came along. So I butt up to the next day, I'm making changes based on what the kids did today. So as long as we can have this, you know, this list of standards, and departments can discuss them and everything, but I would like somewhere in reflected on paper that teachers have the professional responsibility to make the decisions when it comes right down to which standards you're addressing and how you're addressing them, in spite of all that other, those layers of lists and whatever, that you have the responsibility, not just the freedom, but the responsibility to individualize and to take into consideration who your students are. And I think it will be more effective for the ultimate test. Do we really want a standardized product? You know, is that our goal? I don't think so. In education, 12 education. So I see you're all looking bored, but to me this is fascinating, and I think it's the heart and soul and the work of
of the schools. And we consider, you know, the model of Socrates and Plato, speaking of questions, where you ask questions and you don't know exactly where it's going to lead you. You know, where is there room for that in our standards-driven model where we explore and see what does happen and where it does go? And I think that's what the inspiration and the exploration and the individualization of education are at risk in the current climate. And I don't really blame our people that are in education. Our educators know better. It's legislators who have no clue, like Nancy Pelosi coming up with this ridiculous amendment for No Child Left Behind. They don't understand education, and they're not here with us. I wonder if there's any other point I wanted to make. I'd like to get rid of this word using test data so much and use assessment instead. I kind of mentioned that because there's so many, ways to observe creative projects and portfolios and informal assessment. I think that's a limited term. And I object to statements like the district curriculum will be the state's content standards, because I think that the board policy is wanting it to be more inclusive and flexible than that. So I would be in favor of looking at the board policy and maybe changing some language. I'm not prepared to suggest anything. I would even be interested in a study session where some of these questions are explored with educators.
No, wait, I'm on. Adrian.
I'm sorry, Adrian.
Oh, I'm sorry. There. I just jumped in.
Roger, and then Mr. Millar.
Whatever.
How many students do you have in your class, Adrian?
Well, I have 5 classes. I teach 3 periods of world history and 2 periods of literacy. The most I have is 15, and the least is 8, I think, in a class. I was doing something different at a different rate, but you're responding to your group. Your group has group characteristics, and it's a range that's specific to that group of individuals. So you're setting your group activities based on who your students are. That's what I mean by individualizing for your class. So your class is different from the other class of world history or literacy, just because of the individuals that are in it. And it doesn't matter if there's 35 of them. You're still responding to them as people, and they make up a group that you develop group plans for.
I can see that we would want to do that, but if, you know, for example, if you're teaching a group of students how to drive a car, there are certain areas that you're going to need to hit on, and those, to me, in this analogy, that's analogous to the standards. They have to know what the brake does, what the gas pedal does, what the rules of the road are, and then, you know, you have to hit on all of those things in order for them to be considered competent and capable drivers. Beyond that, you can get into other things, tuck and roll upholstery and what have you, you know, if there's an interest expressed in it. But I'm not opposed to having standards so that we know that every child has the basics.
Are you asking me a question? I'm not opposed to having standards either. But what do we do with them? And there, some of the back-to-school nights I've gone to, I hear elementary teachers saying, I have to rush so much to hit, they have to do like 1.5 standards a day, or they have this all laid out to try to cover all of them like you're talking about.
No, it's impossible. I know they can't cover all of them.
And that's what they're deciding. So it's just creates sort of a frustration and a doing a less efficient, less effective job, because it would be better to teach, even in driving, you know, the most important things. I mean, there's some little rules that we...
That may have been a poor analogy. It's just what came into my mind.
But there's little things in the DMV handbook, you know, that we have to review because we don't use them all the time, like how many feet before you do whatever. But
So there's some that are more important than others, even in driving.
And we trust the teachers to working collaboratively to decide which are the really important standards, and these are the ones that they're going.
I would rather see, yes, standards, and I'd rather have them updated, because I think some of them are dated and are becoming kind of obsolete a little bit in some areas. So to be able to use them for a springboard for inspiration, to do as many as you can, but not teach, because if we don't cover all this stuff, we're not going to do well on the test in April. You know, that's a deadly way to try to wake up and approach working with students every day. But to look at all this and what are the possibilities for learning and use it as a springboard for inspiration and still have the flexibility to individualize for you as an instructor and for your students and do the best you can. You know, of course, you have high expectations. I was talking to my daughter Sabrina about this last night, and she was saying, I liked her phrasing. She said, it's not like we're criticizing having standards or saying it's a corrupt process or anything like that. But what about moving beyond standards to quality education? It's not just, oh, here's a list of topics, and like Mr. Perez was saying, of discrete pieces of knowledge. What does quality education look like? It looks like creativity and exploration and critical thinking, and you know, there's so many aspects, and some of those are suggested by standards. If you're a good teacher, you look at standards, you get all kinds of ideas. And you should have time to do those and do those well, and not just so we're not on a railroad track, chug, 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 you know, it's only going one place and you can't get off the track. And, you know, that's not a model for education. That's a quality education in my view.
I always appreciate hearing your thoughts, Adrian.
Thank you. Actually, I do think it's important that we discuss curriculum development and evaluation. I can't speak for my other board members, but I was not bored. I was confused, but I was not bored. And I don't actually think we're talking about curriculum development and evaluation. What we're talking about is the onerous state-imposed standards system, of which I know this isn't popular, but of which we're not going to be able to do a damn thing. Within the framework of reality, I would like to know how we go about creating our curriculum. Last item on here on the AR 6141A says district. Hopefully, that's a quick one.
Yeah, the quick answer is that number one, we either have to adopt the state standards or we have to adopt standards that are certifiably more rigorous than those of the state. And secondly, we need to do so in the full recognition that every public accountability measure will be based on the state standard.
Right. And then,
following along with what you're asking.
Okay, I thought that was a preliminary, pretty quickly disposed of issue. But go ahead.
Developing the state standard, which you're talking about, is that in relationship to the content as well? So would we be able to establish our own standards, but they must be based on the state content?
We can develop our own content.
Okay.
Which
so
must
we could develop our own content.
Based on the
thank
state
you.
Standard or more rigorous than the
thank,
state standard.
Thank you.
Okay. And so I'm kind of really curious about the mechanism, partly because of I think it was Bruce, and I may be getting mixed up. Our committee that we use to develop curriculum, one aspect of it besides administration, staff, parents, is a teacher advisory committees. What, tell me about, Dr. Mtakovich, how we form those committees, what kind of participation we're getting. Do we have to chain people and drag them into the district offices? Or are we hearing teacher voices through this curriculum development committee?
Yes, and the committee that Ms. Delskamp just shared with you that we're forming relative to our K-6 science program. All of our elementary schools are represented. Primary and upper grade level teachers participate with the process, and that's generally kind of the makeup of the group. We also invite parents to participate with us, a representative body of parents to go along with us as, in terms of the process of analyzing the standards and making sure that we know what they mean in terms of what our students are to know and to be able to do. We task analyze each of the standards so we know what that looks like. And then from there, we take a look at the materials that are available to us that have been approved by the state that best align to the core objectives that we've established. And then we go through the cycle of piloting our materials and analyzing what the best materials as well as program is available to our teachers. And then we put it up for public review to them. We are encouraged by what we're seeing with our staff in terms of their ability to deliver the standards. They have the flexibility of how they're going to implement those standards. We are not dictating the strategies and the approach that they should use, though they do have materials that support the delivery of those standards. Our benchmark assessments, of which we have three at the 7-12 level, are going to allow us to have teams of teachers sitting down looking at student work relative to the standards that they've taught. And we're hoping in those collaborative conversations they are going to be able to realize what worked, what didn't work in terms of their instructional delivery, and then in turn just get better at ensuring that all kids have access to the core standards. We're looking at this at the elementary level as well. But it is a vast process involving all levels of the organization. So thanks for asking that question.
And let me follow up about core standards. Now, when you first used this phrase a moment ago, my impression was it was in conjunction with identifying materials.
Yes.
Can we say, okay, we like these standards, and we're going to focus on these guys, and because they fit our closing the achievement gap, or by English language learners, or anything, or those kinds of things. So the answer is yes, we can decide which are going to be core and which are not.
Yeah, and actually, the process we went through with the 7-12 English staff as well as mathematics staff is we took a step back and looked at what we're expecting kids to know and to be able to do, and we said, what are the most essential standards that we expect all kids to be able to learn? And we said to ourselves, what can we possibly do in terms of the delivery and do a good job? And that's why we have 20 to 24 standards at each grade level, 7-12, in those areas that we're saying, let's map out those standards over the course of the year so we can assess how well our kids are doing and then talk about how we've delivered those standards and how we can best adjust our delivery to ensure that all kids are proficient. So
what happens to the non-core standards? They get left in the broom closet for the...
No, well, that's certainly the teacher's choice to incorporate more standards into their repertoire, but what we want to be sure of is that we're having that professional dialogue around what kids are able to do in terms of demonstrating...
Oh, question. By the availability of text and materials, because we do have a fairly limited number of text publishers and people who are writing text, I don't have a sense of that.
Yeah, I'm aware from working with actually all of these core areas in terms of their adoption is that we're rich with materials that support the delivery of these standards, and actually that the materials that we have access to now are aligned to the content standards. So it just.
I guess I meant it more from the standpoint of where we select core standards based on what our student needs are. Are we finding the text materials and materials to support that selection of core standards?
Well, actually, we've just gone through that process, as you know, last year, and we're going into our first year of delivering the essential standards in the 7th through 12th grade level. We're looking at... Rita, are we looking at mathematics next year? So we'll have that opportunity to look at materials just aligned directly to those core. But our experience has been that the publishers are very conscious of providing materials that support the core.
And this, you kind of reminded me of a question that sort of Mark and I were talking about here with the approval of the curriculum, that we had an earlier item of text and materials, sufficient text and materials. It, with the one exception where we didn't have the science curriculum approved yet, should we have gotten that done in time for us to not have been out of compliance? I mean, was it a, and I'm not trying to screw up,
it's, or would've, could've.
Was our mechanism sufficient yes. that we got our work done when we needed to?
Yeah, we need to do a good job of providing a core group of people to have the opportunity to analyze the standards and analyze the materials so we can ensure that we're recommending to you a solid adoption. We're not prepared to come to you with that recommendation last year, and so...
Okay, but it was not because the process was faulty, it was because the process, what it found out, you weren't ready to come to us with the recommendation.
Well, honestly, we didn't have a solid representation across the school district at the elementary level, and so we felt we needed to go back with the process again to ensure that everyone was represented.
And we do have that representation now,
correct,
do you feel?
Correct, correct. Okay. That then in turn has the responsibility to go back to their site and work with their staff. Okay. And so all teachers have the opportunity to be involved in that process.
And in my mind, and again, it's either the lack of coffee or age, I seem to remember there were a group of teachers from this district that are extremely active at the state level in writing, helping write the frameworks. Mm-hmm. Elaine Roosevelt.
Yes. I think Mike Aiello was involved, right. And Elaine Rosenfield, and I think Diana Barnhart. Have participated at that level, yes.
I mean, proportionally, for an area as small as ours compared to others, we had great representation at the state level in the actual writing of this material.
Very involved process.
Yeah, thank you. Dr. Matakovich, just a couple questions to help me understand whether the administrative regulations impede or facilitate the goals in our district regarding these standards. Is it true that the state mandate for the standards-based curriculum, the utilization of that, does it allow flexibility and creativity regarding the implementation of those standards in the classroom?
Absolutely.
And then my question is, do our regulations impede or facilitate that freedom and flexibility to be creative? Do we have any problems with those regulations?
I've not had any feedback that they impede at all. If anything, our staff is professional and have the decision-making capability to deliver their the standards in the way they see fit. We encourage best practices, and then we're talking about the best way to deliver our program, but no teacher is directed to use a certain approach.
So if flexibility and creativity are allowed within the implementation with the state mandate, and our regulations don't impede and in fact facilitate that goal, are we having any type of a problem with these regulations? And you said no.
They have not come to my attention, Mrs. Delskamp.
Okay. Thank you.
It seems to me that I don't know if it's with what's written on the page, but the whole process that we've had recently with...
One of the reasons I think these are on the agenda is to hopefully draw comments or involvement, so if there are issues related to the implementation of the standards, we would have a chance to discuss it and then know that there is an area or there is a direction to go. I mean, I'm with Mr. Millar. I appreciate the discussion. I always have a lot to learn because I'm not an educator. But being a pragmatist, I always like to know, is there something that's broken? Does it need to be fixed? And if so, what is it that can be implemented to fix it? And I think our board meetings are open. There's not many, very many people here. There may be other people who want to speak, which you have the right to do, what it has to do with school business. But without the issue being focused in a way that you can address something, other than just education, self-education, I'm just wondering if there is no problem or no issue, where are we going?
Do you think it would be a good idea to have that statement that there, that flexibility is allowed in the implementation of standards written down in our board policy?
Well, I read the standards for a couple of areas, and right in the preamble from the state, it said each school district is allowed to implement in the best way they see to do this. And that came up our last board meeting regarding physical education, which started the conversation that Chris and I had with Dr. Matakovich and Dr. Valentine. If, in fact, the state says, here are the standards, you figure out the best way to implement them, isn't that an invitation to implement them in the best way for the students?
Yeah, but you're talking district-wide. I want to get down to, you know, teachers having the responsibility, too, of implementing standards, you know, with...
So are you suggesting that teachers should, that each individual teacher should determine his or her own standards for the course content?
No, I'm saying individual teachers should be able to work with their department, have look at the standards, even though some of them are old, but look at the standards and decide which ones are most interesting for this particular class. Work with their department, you know, have conversations, come up with some common things, do all those things we're talking about, but when it gets right down to it in your own classroom with your own class, to be able to deviate from very, very structured things that your department is doing. And I think that that they do probably have that flexibility. But just so they know they have it, and that it's written down that they can make some decisions.
And before I go to you, Mr. Buckman, I have a question. So who decides if that kind of deviation occurs? If a teacher chooses, let's say, to a teacher teaching current history chooses to ignore all but the glories of fascism during World War II as opposed to the horrors of World War II in the focus of their classroom, would that be something that we would be able to support in terms of flexibility?
Well, I don't think glories of fascism is going to be on the standards.
Well, it's content, World War II, you know, multiculturalism. I mean, somebody could make that kind of an argument. So at what point do you decide these are core values that we have and these are things that we believe are outcomes that our students should be walking away from our schools knowing? And how can we assure that that's done? And that's my concern about this conversation. And what I was going to say is, I don't see it as a railroad track. I see it as a lot of different roads, and we can take a lot of different roads to New York, but we all expect to get to New York. And New York, in our case, is making sure that our students have the competencies that they're required when they graduate, make sure that they're able to be successful in college or the world of work, if that's what they choose.
Well, can I give you an example, Chris?
So my question is, If we're saying that all roads lead to New York, then what I expect is you're going to check in Albuquerque, and you're going to check in St. Louis, and you're going to check in Memphis, and then you're going to get to New York, and you need to get there, and we want to make sure that the country's covered, but you still need to get to New York, and you need to get to New York, and you need to make sure that you stop in those other places. And what worries me is that we need to make sure on behalf of our students that they get to New York and that they've covered those highways and they've checked in at those places. Now, whether you take a blue highway or an interstate, that's what I think we're talking about here.
Well, can I say one thing from the actual standards?
I'm sorry?
Instead of hypotheticals, can I use something from a standard just to comment on it? For work on Mexico and Latin America, you have a lot of kids from there, but someone else has an expert on Middle East in your department, so you kind of want to do different things with this. It's not like you're deviating from something or going off on some weird tangent. It's just the freedom to not be part of something that's too prescribed. But you're still, you know, It's using them as a springboard for inspiration instead of a locked box.
I'm sorry, mine's going to be a little less pedantic and a little more... mine's going to be a little more pedestrian, but it bothers me to hear the standards referred to as old. In the United States, we have jumped from one program to another program to another program without success and without giving it an opportunity to see whether it works with the children. The standards that we have in California right now are considered among the highest in the United States, possibly the world, and the children the last thing I saw was that people, all of the socioeconomic groups are improving as they work towards the standards over time. It was either Finland or Norway that recently announced in the last year or two that they were happy with their new math program after 20 years. They finally that was when they made that decision. So I would say, you know, our standards are not old by any shot. They're still working and they're still viable.
Stronger. I think one of the pitfalls of conversations of this kind is that we create a kind of stereotypical opponent, and then we tear the stereotypical opponent apart for being stereotypical. And by example, I think the notion that essentially the system is too mindless to understand what creativity looks like in the classroom and needs to be protected from a sort of unimaginative administration that has no idea or no appreciation for what creativity in the classroom is, it's an easy opponent to beat. It's just that the opponent doesn't exist. We are all in this business together, also consumers of this business. You are a teacher. And driven cultures, okay, that students who read well do real well on reading tests, and students who can think mathematically and analytically about mathematics do very well on mathematics tests, and students who can think critically about historical issues and understand that there are recurring themes through history and through geography do real well on analytic social studies and social kinds of tests. Students who are capable of observing carefully and being able to understand where scientific thought can lead under controlled and uncontrolled circumstances tend to do well on science tests, and I can go on and on and on. As a parent and as a consumer of the system, but also as an administrator and somebody who's been involved in education, the only people who really produce those kinds of students are powerful, powerful teachers. And their students do exactly what the system wants the students to do, and that is to excel on whatever measure comes forward, whether the measure is narrow and mindless or whether the measure is expansive and creative. We want kids to be able to do well on that. There is no opponent to what you're saying, Mrs. Dickinson. And I guess, you know, as I sit and listen to this, I don't know who in the world is opposed to creative teaching of important knowledge.
Mr. Bedrigan, did you have a quick comment?
I've been Bruce Bedrigan, President, Teachers Association. I've been taking a few notes during this discussion, and I'd say that probably none of you have any idea of how frustrating it is for me to sit out there and listen to the discussion and thinking, God, I have some valuable information. I could answer that question. When something like this comes up, I think it would really behoove the board to go ahead and ask a tough question. Walter, you were asking some tough questions, and the administration was doing a good job answering them. But that's their perspective. I'd love to be able to answer and give you the word on the street, the word in the classroom, or what teachers are saying. And so if you could hear an administrative perspective and then hear a teacher perspective – I think you would learn a lot. It's their ability to meet with me one-on-one to get help. It mitigates my ability when I'm spending countless hours trying to grade their evaluation essays and the college application essays. A lot of times I'm just constricted to correcting the first two or three paragraphs, and then I draw a line and say, that's all I had time for. I read the rest of it, but I don't have time to grade the whole thing to make all the corrections. Sure, they can say, okay, a lot of them are the same mistakes that are occurring down there, but I do the best I can. Walter, you've been a champion for lower class size for a long time. It's absolutely critical. Teachers aren't going to wait. They don't wait for you to go ahead and approve the curriculum. And I'm just speaking truthfully here. When we were doing our senior projects 15 years ago, they were on dead white poets. And that's what the students were working on. And that was what was in the curriculum. Today, we went and changed that. We didn't get board approval. We didn't get administrative approval. A teacher came up with an idea. We talked about it as a department, and we changed it. We didn't wait for San Luis High. We changed that to a senior project where students have to go ahead. They have to write three essays. They have to go ahead and explore and find out, what do you want to do? Where are you going? We're going to force you to make a decision. You know, rest of your life, you have to find out where you're going to school, what classes you have to take. You want to be a doctor. You want to be a lawyer. Whatever you want to do, or you want to be a mechanic, you have to go and job shadow that mechanic. You have to go and get out into the real world and do this research. And when they turn in that paper, just a lot more work than doing it on a poet. They come away and the students say, thank you very much. It was a lot of work, but now I know what I'm going to do. And for some of them, it's, boy, I thought I wanted to do that, but after spending a day, and I don't want to work in a cubicle, I can't do that. And that's a valuable lesson right there. But when we send them off to college, they know how much it's going to cost. They know what classes they have to take. They're organized. They're feeling confident. That's one of the great things about that project. One of the drawbacks that I see in this discussion is that, you know, what is language? What do we do for language arts? We want them to read and talk about standards. Writing, listening, and critical thinking. The one that isn't tested is the one we ignore, complete sentences. That concerns me. But what I see is that teachers aren't teaching speaking. A lot of them aren't teaching speaking because it's not tested. So in this test-driven culture, everything has to do with the test. We just received our SMART goals from the administration. We have to write SMART goals, but they must be measurable and they must raise the test scores. We have to go ahead. As a department, we said, we want to work on writing because we think our students are having problems with just writing basic sentences and turning those into paragraphs, into essays. That's what we want to go ahead and do. So we're looking, well, can we tie it in there? Well, maybe we can and maybe we can't. When Mary says, yes, we have teachers. Yes, we have teachers on the Curriculum Study Commission, Commission. But who picks the teachers? Nobody asked me. And it's not the Teachers Association that gets to put input on what teachers are going to be on there, and we would like that. We'd like to have some input on there. You know, Walt was asking that question. Well, a lot of times it's the administration picking the teachers. We'd like some feedback on that. We'd like to go ahead and pick some of the teachers. We'd like to work with the administration and both of us together agree on some teachers. I think that would be a fairer representation. We have benchmark tests. Mr. Spadafore was asking, saying, does the creativity become impeded from this curriculum? Absolutely it becomes impeded. That's what West Ed was about. When we go ahead in professional development and we say, yes, we have to go ahead and we want real professional development. We don't want professional development that goes ahead and teaches. We have to teach to the test. That's not what we want. And when we go ahead and look at the test and the West Ed morphs into the benchmark tests, and when every teacher that I talk to, although what I'm finding out on the street is the word is, the elementary, K through 6, the elementary likes the benchmarks. They find it very valuable. 7 through 12 teachers, waste of time. You're impeding my creativity. You're impeding my ability to teach the instruction. So why are we doing it? Just, I'm almost done. I guess the last thing I just, and I think we have a good administration, but we also have good teachers, and you got to get both sides of the picture. So, thank you.
Yeah, because I'd like to move on to item number 8, please. Go ahead.
I wanted to comment on what Dr. Valentine said about who's the opponent. And it certainly wouldn't be, in my view, educators, like the administrators and all that in our district. But I think there is something that we need to fight, and that is the trend that's encapsulated in No Child Left Behind, where there's an undermining of public education going on. And there's a way that the testing and the standards fit into that that I think we have to rebel against, quite frankly, and not teach to the test. I mean, if we have a law that says all schools are going to be failing schools by 2014, you know, that's the type of law we should ignore, because that's ridiculous. You know, and not teach to the test. I know Ms. Lamphy, when she was telling me, she never looks at the test. She just teaches what's great and does good in teaching. And if it's on the test, awesome. If it's not, at least it was great teaching. I think we need to keep teaching, being the best educators we can be and the best district we can be, and not worry too much if it's on the test or not. And what, let the chips fall where they may, and be a team for excellence. I think that's, I think that is something that we need to really actively pursue, because there's a pressure against schools, not just our district, every district, to not be that way in teaching. So that's what I'm addressing.
I will endeavor to be brief. I do appreciate Bruce's comments. And I will say the example that you cited of reburying the dead poets and leaving them there, to me, is, you know, emblematic of the kind of, you know, judgment, professionalism, and decision making that we want our teachers and our staff to have. And I keep getting this deja vu feeling. And Bruce, I wish there were. I'd like us to at least explore the idea of broadening the teacher representation on the curriculum development committees, and let's make sure we're not going to the same well over and over again. And I see Mary's reaction to this, and it also appears to come forward and to really sort of share, you know, breakdowns in the systems. And what I remember hearing, and I could have faulty recollection, was, yes, it would be great if we could do it better and we should continue to strive to do it better, but I didn't hear anybody really saying the school district, the administration, is preventing me from doing my job and trying to do it creatively and well. I heard frustrations and I heard some complaints, but frankly not that many complaints. And you know, it's not fair, but in a sense, the absence of folks here, and I'm glad you were here, Bruce, is, you know, just as you should for your role in the Teachers Association. But, you know, I'm not seeing anybody here. And, you know, I know teachers, and I talk to teachers. Believe me, I know some that never spare telling me what they think about things. And I'm just not hearing the same kind of concerns that Adrian seems to be concerned about. So, I don't know. I guess that's all I have to say.
Okay. Let's move on then to item number 8, process for filling the board vacancy. Makes me sick to read this. Anticipated by the resignation of David Peter.
With reluctance, we present the board's options for filling the vacancy. Mr. Peter, I'm sorry, Mr. Peter, did you want to make a statement on? Please,
if I can, that'd be great.
I think, as you all know, I sent you an email about this, and we've had the discussion, which led to this discussion. But my professional career is making a pretty major left turn in about 2 months. It actually has already made one, but we'll be opening a new business in Morro Bay, and one that will be open 7 days a week, and that will require my attention several hours of those 7 days every week, which will render it very difficult for me to continue to serve on the board after we're open. It's a restaurant business. And while it is an honor and a privilege to have served on this board, and I would very much like to continue serving on this board with all of you and the administrators and the teachers and staff of the school, I'll be unable to do that after the 20th of November. For me, it was a very difficult decision. This is probably one of the most rewarding things that I've done in my life so far. And if it were just attending the board meetings, I think I would be able to work that out and continue to participate.
Mr. Spadafore?
And I echo those sentiments. We'll miss you. And good luck.
Thanks.
With the business venture, which we all know about. I had a question regarding the provisional appointment, which may be the choice that we'll make as a board. The individual who applies and is appointed to complete the period left until the next election, at that point has a choice to run for a full four-year term, which will be open at that time, or a two-year term until the election cycle, which David would participate. It says it right here.
Yeah.
It says it right here. So my question is, if the person who's appointed, and I'm just doing this to know what may be down the road, the person who's appointed to be in David's position until the election next year decides to run for a four-year term that becomes available at that time, will the board then have another position to fill on this basis because the remaining 2 years is vacant?
Yeah, go ahead. The expert.
The remainder of Mr. Peter's seat will appear on the 2008 ballot as a two-year vacancy, and it will be open for any candidate to choose to run for that. So the appointed person would be able to choose to run for that seat, as would anybody else in the community. If for any reason that was not filled, if that person chose to run for a four-year seat and no one declared for the two-year vacancy, it would leave another opening that after that election the board would have to address, as we're doing now.
So if there are candidates for both the two-year term and the four-year term, then the community will vote for both of those positions to complete the two-year term and for the four-year term that may come up at that
time. Yes, but they will appear as separate seats, so the candidate will have to choose which term they're running for. Voters won't choose the top three people and the bottom one takes the two-year seat. It's a specific opening they'll be applying for.
I've got to say, I think we need to do a provisional appointment. We can't leave the seat open, and I, for one, don't believe that we should spend the money to have a special election. And so I would propose that we direct the staff to open the process for a provisional appointment to fill Mr. Peter's seat at that time. And we do invite everybody from the Morro Bay Los Osos areas, because it is trustee area number two. Okay?
I do have one request about that.
Mr. Muller?
I'm going to be out of the country and from the first part of November until I think it's the 12th or 13th, so I'd like to have it on the agenda for after I return.
Yeah, what I was thinking is Mr. Peters' resignation would be effective, I believe, the 20th, which is the second board meeting in November, and I actually don't believe that you can assist in the choosing of your successor. I don't think he can be. What? Did Patty? Oh, okay.
It was at a special meeting. It was a special board meeting that was scheduled.
Okay.
Because I believe... Oh, I'm sorry.
That'd be great, then.
I believe she was on the board until there was a selection, and then she stepped down, and the new board member actually moves up. It's quite a procession. It's kind of like Miss America. Whoever it may be.
And you can participate in the swimsuit portion of it, Dan. Okay, given that, then shall we move on to the consent agenda? All right. And let's see. We have item number 9, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Number 10, approval to teach a class outside of credential authorization.
Could you please pull that?
Okay. 11, acceptance of donations. 12, disposition of surplus property. 13, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 14, approval of purchase orders. 15, approval of warrants and payroll. And 16, approval of quarterly report on uniform complaint filings, and that's the Williams settlement.
I make a motion to approve 9, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16.
I'll second that.
It's been moved by Mr. Spadafor and seconded by Mr. Buckman. Any discussion on these items? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Carries 7-0. Let's move to item number 10, Mr. Spadafor.
Yeah, I just had a quick question for Rick, please. Rick, I just wanted to know who made up the alternative assignment assessment team?
Yeah, that's a team of made up of two administrators and two teachers. We've had the same teachers for several years because of their expertise. It's Diana Barnhart, our middle school teacher of the year, and Ivan Simon, who's really scrutinizing, and of San Luis Obispo High School, and then myself and Rita.
I mean, 10 be approved, please.
Okay. It's been moved by Mr. Spadafor, seconded by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Carries 7-0. Let's move on then to item number 18, advance agenda. Do we have anything that we'd like to put on the advance agenda?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Millar.
As we all know, I'm sitting up here, but the last meeting, Mr. Buckman raised some issues regarding during our discussion of expulsions and suspensions that we were required to discuss in closed session because of the potential for identifying specific students. And we had a very interesting discussion around that in closed session this evening. And I felt like some important matters surfaced, and I would like to propose that we have an agenda item that deals specifically with the concerns that were raised about expulsions and suspension hearings and a broader view at what we can, should do within addressing the specific needs of a specific student who comes to the board in disciplinary matters.
I would support that, and I see other people supporting that as well. Okay. Mrs. Dickinson and then Mr. Spadafor.
I was listening to Walter say, you know, where are the teachers on the issue of getting feedback from teachers. But I thought of the request made by the teachers with a survey that the board respond to that. Mr. Bedrigian made a comment last meeting that the association requests the board respond to their survey on a certain topic that's somewhat related to, test benchmarking. So since we are interested in knowing what teachers think, maybe we should have an agenda item where we look at that and respond to it, or maybe they want to update it. I don't know, but I think that deserves a response since we are interested in what the teachers think.
I think our response is that we received it and we really appreciate the feedback that you gave us on that. Is there anything else? Mr. Spadafor?
I would like to see if there's intra-year.
I would support that, and the reason I'm thinking that is I just recently read, and I believe it was from Bill Lockyer, it might have been in today's Tribune or in the Times this morning, that the state treasurer is predicting flat or declining revenues statewide for the next 3 years with increasing deficits. And so that might be something that we want to look at that could affect the financial health of the school district.
Well, I guess my reaction is, isn't this a discussion we have every year when we build our budgets? So, you know.
Well, I mean, I may be wrong on this, but I see that as two separate issues. I think the budget is a structure that is completed each year in a process that's standard. But I think this issue has more to do with changes within the district in respect to future budget availability or future funding availability and the changing population of our schools within the district and what that may mean in terms of programs and in terms of services down the road. There's a bigger issue, I think, than just the annual budget.
Well, but the discussion I was referring to is at the beginning of the annual budget, when we have a discussion about what assumptions we're going to make about revenues and so I guess I don't understand what.
Yeah, and I'm doing
the revenue part of it.
I'm doing a poor job. Okay.
I'm not opposed to it. I'm just not sure I understood.
Yeah, I apologize for that. I think that in addition to the revenues going flat, in addition to programs that may change, those are part of the budget discussion. I think there are going to be issues in the next 2 to 5 years about the enrollment we have at different schools within the district and how that may be impacted by the programs that will be provided, the students that are going to be served. And I think that has to do with our demographic study that we had a year and a half ago. And I just think, I may be alone on this. Chris indicated some interest also, but I think as a board, we should again collate that demographic information with the possible funding loss to determine if there are any issues that can be addressed. And I know in past discussions this has come up in different ways. And I'd be happy to hear from Dr. Valentine if this is a non-issue, because we would save everybody a lot of time. But it was here to be agendized at some point, and I think we're at a point now with declining enrollment and flattening fees or flattening income that it may be helpful. I don't mean to put you on the spot, and I know you don't have to
say one time.
A couple of good news pieces. I received notification that the board may recall that Diana Barnhart, in addition to having been selected as the California Teacher of the Year, was also selected by the California Association of Republican Women as their candidate for California Teacher of the Year for their organization. She was then put forward in nomination for the National Association of Republican Women and their honoree for Teacher of the Year, and we just learned that she was honored as the National Association of Republican Women's National Teacher of the Year. I didn't ask that. At 10 o'clock at night, this is what we'd really like to do is bring Diana in. She's actually out today, but bring her to a subsequent board meeting and recognize her maybe more formally than this. The other is that Eric Jarvis, who's our teacher on special assignment for technology, and Dr. Matakovich collaborated on a grant, a technology grant that brings technology equipment and staff development into the district, specifically focused on grades 4 through 6. It's called Enhancing Education Through Technology. It carries the abbreviation of EETT, but their efforts are bringing in $377,000 to San Luis Coastal's grade 4 through 6, and we will be able to fortify our technology capabilities in those grade levels. Good news indeed.
And I just wanted to say that hearing about Diana Barnhart, that's the positive elephant in the room. Mr. Peter?
I do have something I'd like to say, mainly as a parent. Last week, I got a notice from Morro Bay High School that PowerGrade had been rolled out, and I got another one this week from Las Osas Middle School relating to my kids, one at each school. And I got to tell you how pleased I am as a parent having, you know, online access to the entire grading system. I know that it can be really challenging when you roll out large software projects like this, whether it's, 20 people or 400 people or several thousand people. But large software implementations are a real challenge. And sometimes being in the IT department when you're going through those rollouts can be a really thankless position to be in, because when teachers and anybody who's going through an implementation is struggling with learning a new system, you go in, you click your student, you see all their test scores, all their quiz scores, all their homework scores in every class. You can click and drill deeper and see what assignments are coming. It's a fantastic tool. So well done. And I know the teachers are probably still struggling to overcome some of the implementation issues, but as a parent, we appreciate all the hard work they're going through to bring that up to speed. So.
I was just going to say, David, every student in the district is just like cringing now.
Believe me.
There's no more dog eating your homework.
The dinner discussions last week have been pretty interesting.
Mr. Buckman?
I'd just like to say I had the opportunity last week to attend the Arts Obispo Education Committee and report that they're working. They've changed their program from supporting field trips to art events to actually putting artists in the schools, and it seems to be working quite well. As your representative to the ROP board, I just urge all the teachers, all the counselors, and all of us to direct as many children as possible to the ROP program, because our cap went up, I think, about 20 students, and if we don't use it, we lose it. And it means a lot of dollars and a lot of good education to the kids.
Yeah, thank you. Three things. Dr. Valentine and I traveled to Montecito and met with the Schools for Sound Finance, and a lot of helpful information was presented. The superintendent of the Santa Barbara County Schools was there, Mr. Cerrone, and there was just a lot of helpful information, and I think that becomes part of our discussion regarding enhancement, revenue enhancement in the future. Second thing is the second teacher board informal gathering is going to be October 12th, not October 5th, at my home that Mr. Bedrigan had helped organize at 4:30, and I think there's going to be an email to teachers. And I think it's an opportunity that is available where communication can be an art form and information shared, and three board members can participate. I participated in the last one. I'm just hosting this one, so I would encourage three other board members, if you have the time, to just indicate that you can come and sit down and talk, because communication may take place in other formats and forums rather than here on our board meeting nights, and it's an opportunity. Objectives for our high school students is an important goal. PE credit for student athletes is one issue, but it has to be integrated with what the PE standards are, and there has to be some additional conversation between the coaches and the PE staff about how to implement programs both on the athletic level and the PE level that best serve the students. It's not a separate issue. And then finally, the discussion about what is the best method to provide physical education for all students is something that touches everyone, not just the athlete and not just the student who's not on an athletic team. So I would encourage at that meeting that the discussion be broadened, not to just be a PE waiver issue, but something much more important in terms of how we deliver that to our students and what the teachers, the coaches, and other interested parties can contribute to that discussion.
And I just wanted to let everybody know I was up in Sacramento last week for a special ed directors conference, and then as part of separate from that, I was at the California School Board Association program phone conference. I got to sit in actually at CSBA, and just good news is the registration is ahead of last year for the conference. There's going to be a 5K run walk on Friday morning, and I would invite everybody to do that. It's 7 o'clock in the morning, and I know everybody's going to be bright and chipper that early. Also on Friday, we're going to have a school bus trip to a local San Diego high school. I believe it's San Dieguito High School. And then on Wednesday... Okay. Thank you. And then on Wednesday, although the conference starts on Thursday, on Wednesday... there is also going to be an all-day special ed colloquium for anybody that has an interest in that topic. On which?
On the Wednesday.
They're having a number of speakers relating to special education. I think one of the topics is going to be response to intervention and implementation of response to intervention programs. So if you come down Wednesday, there are several opportunities for things for engagement on Wednesday, but that's certainly one of them that people might be interested in doing. Anything else? Okay, seeing nothing else, then I think we need to adjourn.